We are going to be joined here in a second by Evan Davis, sports writer and not very knowledgeable baseball man, to talk a little bit about baseball in general and the Red Sox. And welcome back to downtown, Evan.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I know Rich, were he feeling well, would want to be here, and he would probably have far more salient questions than I have, but we're gonna give it the best. Thank you for joining us.
I have faith in you, Bruce.
All right. We had an interesting Hall of Fame selection. And I was wanted to ask you right out of the gate. Here we have Jeff Bagwell, who from Connecticut, a guy I grew up rooting for, make it to the Hall. And a lot of people were wondering whether he'd ever get there. There was this scent of PEDs hanging over him. Do you think that Bud Selig being chosen for the Hall is going to change the way the whole PED thing is viewed?
Yeah, I don't know just to what degree Selig's entry had an effect. I mean, certainly a lot of writers came out and said that it did. Because if you have Selig represented in Cooperstown, a guy who, you know, it's very obvious how much he affected the continuance of the PED era in the 90s. If you have him in, then it's kind of silly to not let people like Jeff Bagwell or Yvonne Rodriguez in, guys who never were formally accused of PED use, but just were kind of generally suspected of it. I think that the electorate has changed a lot over the last few years, so I think that guys like Bagwell and Pudge were probably going to get in anyway. But with Selig there, it's really kind of silly to say the guy who was, you know, running the whole show gets to be honored with a plaque, and the players who may or may not have done something are not. So I'm not surprised that Bagwell and Pudge are in, and I think a lot more guys in the future now who may have had to deal with those issues will start getting elected as well.
Do you think that the transparency that comes about next year with the no longer sealed ballots, if you will, when we're going to know who writers voted or did not vote for, will make a difference in the lives of a lot of those guys?
Oh, almost certainly. I think we're already starting to see the effects of transparency. So many more writers are publishing their ballots in public forums. There's a guy named Ryan Thibodeau who runs a website called bbhoftracker.com, the Baseball Hall of Fame tracker, where he collects every single publicly released ballot and tallies them up. And it's become a fairly predictive way of finding out who gets in every year. But when you have to defend your choices in public, it's much tougher to say that you're not voting for someone who seems like an obvious candidate. You have to hold yourself to a higher standard and have to be a little bit more accountable. And I think that's only helping the standard of player that's actually getting in year after year.
Well, Hall of Fame aside, people are getting very excited who live in the cold north that they think spring training is coming soon. And one of the questions that I'm hearing people ask around here is trying to assess, where are the Red Sox in this picture? What do they still need to do? What have they done well? You know,
I think that Red Sox fans should be thrilled. Seems to me that they are probably the team to beat in the American League this year, especially with the addition of Chris Sale into that starting rotation. This is a pretty terrifying group, and it's really complete. I mean, they have a hole at catcher. The third base situation isn't really resolved yet, but I mean, everywhere else on the diamond, they are set with Dustin Pedroia, Xander Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, who will, you know, is probably the best five-tool player in the game besides Mike Trout. And David Price, you know, his surface numbers didn't look so great, but the underlying numbers were really, really strong, as they always are with him. And Sale is probably the best pitcher in the American League. And Porcello is the reigning AL Cy Young champ. So, and they have Craig Kimbrell, and they have Tyler Thornburg, and they're getting Carson Smith back next summer in the bullpen. So, I mean, this is a shockingly complete team, and I think they're projected to go, you know, something like 92, 93 wins for 2017 if everything goes according to plan. So I think that they've had a very strong offseason. I think, you know, Dave Dombrowski recognized that this is very much a win-now team, and so any offseason moves should be directed toward getting them back to the World Series. And I think Red Sox fans should be absolutely content, and I think their faith is going to pay off this year.
Evan, this is Carey here. Thanks again for joining us. Just with the Red Sox moves, and they've made some good ones, who else do you think has made some of the best moves in the AL so far this winter?
I think the best value move of any team is probably Cleveland's signing of Edwin Encarnacion. Encarnacion may be, you know, on the verge of turning 35, but he's still one of the best hitters in baseball. And arguably one of the two or three best hitters among this year's free agent class. I expected him to get a four-year deal. I expected him to get a lot more money than he ended up signing for. The Indians managed to swoop in and grab him for 3 years and $60 million. That is a steal when considering the kind of player that Encarnacion is. And the Indians are also in win-now mode, and, you know, they were potentially an out away from winning the World Series in Game 7 last year, and they're going to want to do it again. So I think they made a massive upgrade at first base DH position. The Seattle Mariners are very interesting to me. Jerry DePoto has been making a ton of trades, mostly geared around the fact that he has a very legendary kind of core of offensive players in Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano, guys whose contracts really aren't movable right now, so it's hard for him to do a full rebuild. I don't think ownership would want him to anyway, so he's been kind of filling gaps around those players as best he can. And I think they're going to be a really interesting team. I think they're going to be in the wild card hunt. They certainly were last year. I wouldn't surprise me if, you know, things really broke the right way, if Felix Hernandez and Hisashi Iwakuma can maybe find some of their old form again. You know, they might be able to push up against Houston for the AL West crown. We'll have to see.
One question I have is, do you think that the Yankees can survive New York media if they continue to develop that deep stock of young players and not start trading for the future? Start trading the future for the moment?
Well, I know Red Sox fans would love it if the New York media turned on the team. That I know. I think the Yankees are very adaptable to what they're doing. It's not really something that they've ever done before, but it also wasn't too long ago where they had a collection of young, unheralded, unknown prospects that all kind of bloomed at about the same time. People might know them by the names of Pettit, Rivera, Jeter, and Posada. And those teams won four World Series in 5 years on the backs of those guys. So I think that the Yankees, with their however obnoxious entreaties to tradition in teary-eyed history, Yankees fans can really easily get on board with what they perceive to be kind of true blue pinstripe players. Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge and Greg Bird and guys like that, I think they could easily be, you know, refashioned in the minds of the media and among the fan base to be another core four.
If the Red Sox stumble even briefly at the beginning of the year, do we think John Farrell is on a short leash?
I've never really understood why people think that John Farrell is always in the hot seat. I know that was going around a lot last year. I mean, I guess part of it comes from the fact that 2014 and 2015 didn't really turn out the way that people had hoped. But, you know, a massive figure at third base by the name of Pablo Sandoval had a lot to do with that, and as did Hanley Ramirez's initial struggles. So I think that Farrell is going to be fine. I don't really get the sense that Dave Dombrowski's ever been a guy to pull the trigger on firing a manager quickly. And it's also really difficult for me to see them struggling, honestly. I mean, the team is just so deep and they're so good, on paper at least, that I think Farrell will be able to make it through the year, even if they don't make a playoff run.
Read just the other day that Pedro thinks Ortiz is still coming back.
Does David Ortiz know that?
I don't know. But I mean, I saw this on a fairly reputable sports blog, and I thought, really? I mean, does he really want to come back? I mean, he all he has to do is hit tennis balls out of the park now, and he makes money. I mean, can you see? I mean, I can't see the Red Sox really wanting him back.
I think that if you read any of these stories, and there have been a few of them published in the last year, of what David Ortiz has had to go through physically over the last few seasons just to be able to stand in the batter's box, I think people will appreciate the fact that he is, I'm sure, very happy to never put on a major league uniform again. If the reports are credible and it happens, I will be gobsmacked because he basically, the quote from one of his trainers was that he was standing on stumps. Such was the condition of his feet and his ankles.
Right.
Scar tissue just bore down all the way. I mean, he was in bad, bad shape, and it took a lot of work in order to make sure that he was game ready. So, you know, at his age, and especially given the fact that he had one of the best seasons of his career at the age that he was when he retired, I just can't see it. I mean, the man's got kids. You know, yeah. He's got the rest of his life to enjoy his money and his family. I think that it would be wise for him to stay retired. No doubt about it.
Well, Evan, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you here on Downtown. I just want to let people know that they can follow your work at FanRag Sports, Vice Sports, other places from time to time. You're the host of the Sky Blue FC's halftime show, and you contribute to MLB Now. He's all over the place. He's an excellent writer. Evan Davis, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Bruce.